We'd like to welcome you all this morning to the Active Transportation Committee meeting of August 14th, 2019. The time is now 10:50, and we will begin. We will start with our welcoming everybody and going around and introducing ourselves, so I will begin. I'm Mayor Joe Schoeblin with South Weber City, and I'm the Chair of the Active Transportation Committee. And then we'll start over here with Katie.
Katie, Director of Los Angeles Staff.
Brian, Deputy Department of Health.
Katie Witt, Mayor of Cape Coral.
Katie Goodhart, you have planning.
Jim Price with MAG in Utah County.
Andrew Gerber with WFRC.
Mary Pratt, WFRC.
Keith Ryan with Wasatch Front.
Corey Gowen, Wasatch Front.
Jared Stewart with Salt Lake County Regional Development.
Thomas Gargiola, Stockton Mayor.
Norm Searle, Riverdale City.
And then over here, Chris Delver, going with the front staff. Sarah Hudson, Angel Utah.
Bryce Perry, Harvard City.
Tim Parks, Florida Engineers.
Scotch A, CRS Engineers.
Matthew Zage, all the planning design.
Go with one.
Kim Clausing, Department of Health.
Mark Weinstein, American Water Association.
Scott Hess, WFRC staff.
Alex Ray, WFRC staff.
Debbie Thompson, WFRC staff. Corey Victor, WFRC staff. Holly Keane, Salt Lake County, Public Works.
Andy Malta, Cottonwood City.
Zachary Smollett, Prairie City.
Ed Hacker with WFRC staff.
All right, thank you. Well, we also, oh, I'm sorry, who else?
Bryce Borat, Florida City, representing Mayor Brown.
Thank you, Bryce. All right, we also have joining us remotely Travis Olson and Mark Bradley, the Beacon City Planner. So thank you all for joining us today. We will begin. Our first item is to approve the minutes from June 12th, 2019 meeting. Are there any comments or questions on those minutes? If not, then I will. And by the way, when you make a motion or a second, please say your name. So we're still trying to learn names here, so if you could say your name when you do it, I'd appreciate it. I will entertain a motion to approve those minutes. And please turn on your mic and speak into it.
So moved.
Okay, Mayor Witt, do I have a second?
Mayor Cardiola, a second.
Okay, Mayor Cardiola has a second. Are there any further comments or questions? Then all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And the motion carries. All right. I just wanted to make sure that you are aware of a lot of awesome events coming up this fall, especially the Making Strides Creating Walkable Communities event, also the Wasatch Choice Day at the ULCT conference, and the Move Utah Summit. I also super excited about the Madison Mobile Active Transportation Tour. Maybe some of you are going to be joining me on that. I'm really excited about that next month. I'm looking forward to getting new, fresh ideas and bringing back to our communities. So, all right, item number three is public comment. Please limit your comments to 2 minutes or less, and we are now public comment.
Kim Clausing, Tola County Health. I just wanted to update you on our Ramit Lane opening, and I wanted to thank quite a few people that are here that came and attended the event. It was a small segment in Tola County, but we're getting started, so I just wanted to keep Tola County in all your minds that we're trying to get some more active transportation out in that area. I applied for 5 separate grants this past month and a half. 2 of them are for segments of the Tula Valley Pathway. 1 of them is for national parks for assistance to try to help get some of our pathway plans up into the foothills to our public access of the BLM lands up there. I have been working with 2 ladies with BLM that we're looking at trying to get some more trails, pathways on the bench area, which is the Bonneville bench area. So hopefully we can get some of our trails that are through our communities up connected to that area. So just wanted to update you that we're trying in Tooele County, and hopefully someday we can have a great kickoff event out there that we kind of connect Tooele County to Salt Lake County and have a big old biking, you know, hiking, walking event out there. So it'd be great for you to come out and visit our community. So just wanted to update. Thank you.
That sounds great. Thank you so much. Go to Tooele County. Any further public comment? Okay, hearing none, we will move to our next item, which is the Golden Spoke event recap, and Heidi will be addressing us.
Heidi Goodhart. I was like very echoey. My name is Heidi Goodhart. I'm with the Utah Department of Transportation. And this year, UDOT and the Move Utah program kind of led the charge on leading the second annual Golden Spoke bike ride that took place in May during Bike Month. We had 248 attendees sign up for various segments or distances along the route. And I think that we had about more than that join the day of. It's kind of funny to do registration for a free event. Sometimes people just show up or join here in the middle of the day because they're already out on the trail enjoying it. So I think it was hugely successful. Thank you to Mayor Joe for showing up and kicking off the day. And you were in Kaysville?
Actually,
you were in Ogden, yes.
Yes,
almost at the end. Sorry, there were so many kind of checkpoints along the way. But it was a great ride. We're still having, Katie's done a great job of starting kind of a presentation and slideshow, and we need to finish that up and get it posted to the website. So if you want to go to the Move Utah website and look over the Golden Spoke Ride and see our sponsors that were IHC, Jordan River Commission, Department of Health, were you guys a partial sponsor on this one as well? Huge event. We're really appreciative of everyone that assisted with that day of. I started the morning in Provo Canyon with my e-cargo bike, and I was glad I brought it because I was able to assist a mom, I think around mile 75, who showed up with her two children and extremely low tires in the hilly section after Lehigh, connecting Utah and Salt Lake County. So I threw her kids in the bucket bike, pumped up her tires, took the kids for about 12 miles until we could connect them with tracks, and then continued on the day. And then Hugh was able to throw my cargo bike in his minivan so they could catch back up with the ride, because that was a little bit of a delay. But overall, a hugely successful day. We're hoping on doing more events around the Golden Spoke in the future. And talking about the Golden Spoke, I'm going to just use this as an opportunity. Katie, could you switch over to the next tab? So as we all know, the Golden Spoke connects 105 miles of family-friendly trail that, you know, kind of creates the backbone trail network throughout our urban areas in Wasatch Front and in MAG. And we're using that as a kind of continuation of the spine in the rest of the state. So we are moving forward with designation this September for a U.S. bike route that goes from the Idaho state line to the Arizona state line. It'll be USBR, U.S. Bike Route 77, and that designation will come through ASHTO and be a formal route that UDOT will be signing and designating. And through the urban areas, we're going to be having the Golden Spoke be that trail facility backbone. And the rest of the trail, or the rest of the roadway infrastructure, is kind of exhibited in this map, and I'll be sure to send this out. We're open to public comment right now on some areas of improvement, areas of concern, areas of kind of thumbs up. So there's different tabs that show the methodology behind the selection of the route. We kind of have an interest in putting this route on UDOT facilities so that we can ensure maintenance and signage and just continuous expectations for kind of these bicycle tours that will be traveling through the state. So there's various tabs. You can see the methodology behind rumble strip placement, shoulder widths, our safety index, and then we've also pulled in some of our Strava data ridership so that we can best align the route to where people are already riding so that local riders also benefit from the designation of the route. So I encourage you to look at this and realize that the Golden Spoke is helping spawn another 410 miles of designated U.S. bike route infrastructure through the state of Utah, sponsored by Utah, or by UDOT. So thanks so much for encouraging connected facilities. And then the long range plan has outlined this route and is kind of the expectation is that over time, this entire corridor will be mixed use trail and paved pathways that are off roadway separated so that we can still provide that continuous facility statewide into the future. So any questions on the route? Okay, I'll be sure to email out the link so people can see it. Yeah, Hugh.
Once it becomes an official designation, is there going to be some sort of large group kickoff ride to do the whole thing?
That's a great question. I've been wanting to ride the whole thing, so maybe we'll get a little kickoff at UDOT. It is 410 miles, so it would be a few days. We're probably camping, and we'll have to see, what we do. But we're going to be designating it in hopefully beginning of October with Ashto. Maybe we could plan an October ride or just shoot for something in the spring. So.
I attended that, the Golden Spoke, and it was a lot of fun. And they were really good with their snacks and keep us hydrated. And I thought it was really well run. So appreciate that. Also, your extra cargo was planned. We did that on purpose so that you wouldn't blow everyone else away. So we have to give us some sort of a handicap. So. All right. Any other comments?
I have just one comment. So one part of the Golden Spoke system is, of course, the Jordan River Parkway. Yesterday, a bunch of WFRC staff went out to do a volunteer activity, pulling goat heads and then also picking up some trash along the Jordan River Parkway. So if anybody is looking for volunteer activities, trail maintenance, as everybody knows, is a really big issue. And a tricky issue for, is it the city that does it, is it the county that does it, are nonprofits supposed to do it, do volunteers do it, and maybe the answer is a little bit of all of the above. So if anybody out there is looking for volunteer activity, you can get in touch with the Jordan River Commission, and they love having volunteers to come help them out. I imagine that's true in Provo and Kaysville and everywhere along the way. So, but it was a fun activity.
Can I piggyback on that really quickly? At a previous meeting, Mr. Mock brought up the idea of a bounty on goat heads, and that's something the Jordan River Commission has actually implemented. They have some funding through that.
Yeah, they have a grant through that.
Yeah, and I think Elliot's aware of this, but I think it's $2 a pound. You have to be part of some sort of organization, right? I can't show up this queue and just start pulling heads and weighing them and getting cashed out. But it's kind of a cool thing to encourage, again, trying to keep the trail clean. So thanks to Elliot, thanks to the Jordan River Commission for implementing that. It's really cool.
Thank you.
Thanks so much, Heidi. All right, we've had a few more people come, and we would like to have them introduce ourselves before we move on. If we could start over here with Mayor Cafusi.
Hello, I'm Mayor Michelle Cafusi from the City of Provo.
All right, and I know there were some.
Phil.
Yes, Phil. Oh, Phil, right here.
Phil Sarnoff, Lake Utah.
Short timer.
Hi, Dad, to us, man.
Welcome, Phil. I'm sorry, can you say your name again?
Dave Eldis, Lake Utah.
Thank you, Dave. Is that it? Brent, thank you. Anyone else? Good. All right. We will move on with item number 5, which is the Utah Health Improvement Index. And
good morning, everybody. My name is Dulce Diaz, and I'm the director of the Office of Health Disparities at the Utah Department of Health. Today, we are going to be talking about health disparities, social determinants of health, how public transportation and active transportation can play a role addressing the social determinants of health and health disparities, and a tool that the Utah Department of Health has developed to measure this. So that tool is the Utah's Health Improvement Index. But before we talk about the Utah Health Improvement Index, I would like to give you an overview of health disparities, health equity. Then we will talk a little bit about the Utah Health Improvement Index. We define the Health Improvement Index, the classification, the health indicators that we measure about the Health Improvement Index, and also we will move to the practical applications of the Health Improvement Index, how transportation affects health, and how you know, active transportation and public transportation can use the Health Improvement Index. So let's start defining health disparities. When we talk about health disparities are more than difference in health outcomes. The fact that some populations experience some severe diseases more than others is a necessary but is an insufficient condition to establish a health disparity. A disparity implies that the difference is avoidable, unfair, and unjust. Remember, avoidable, unfair, and unjust. So, are the health differences avoidable, unfair, and unjust? Let's go over a few examples. What about if I tell you that the skiers in Utah have more leg and fracture than non-skiers? Life expectancy in men is lower than in women. Elderly adults have a higher arthritis prevalence than younger adults. White women are more likely to diagnose with breast cancer than non-white women. We are talking about health difference here. So how do we decide if that difference is avoidable, unfair, and unjust? Let's go over the examples. Remember, the difference has to be always detrimental to groups that are already disadvantaged in opportunities and resources. Detrimental to groups that are already disadvantaged in opportunities and resources. So let's go back to the examples that I give you. Skiers in Utah have more leg and fracture than non-skiers. Do you think that the skiers in Utah are disadvantaged in opportunities and resources over non-skiers? No. What about if I tell you that racial ethnic minorities in Utah have a higher uninsurance that race than non-racial ethnic minorities? Do you think that racial ethnic minorities in Utah are disadvantaged in opportunities and resources? Yes. So the first one is not a health disparity, it's a health difference. The second one is a health disparity. Life expectancy in men is lower than in women. Do you think that men are disadvantaged in opportunities and resources over women? No. What about if I tell you that life expectancy in men with less than a high school diploma is lower than in men with a college degree? The first group is disadvantaged in opportunity and resources regarding to the second group. So the first one is a health adverse health outcome, the second one is a health disparity. Elderly adults have a higher arthritis prevalence than younger adults. Elderly adults in Paiute County have a higher arthritis prevalence than elderly adults in Sullivan County. Do you think that maybe for some reason elderly adults in Paiute County are disadvantaged in opportunities and resources regarding to elderly adults in Sullivan County? Probably yes. The first one is a health difference, the second one is a health disparity. White women are more likely to be diagnosed with breast cancer than non-white women. Lower socioeconomic status women are more likely to die of breast cancer than higher socioeconomic status women. The first one is a disadvantage in opportunities and resources regarding to the second one. So remember, the health difference has to be avoidable, unfair, and unjust, and the health difference has to be detrimental to groups that are already disadvantaged in opportunities and resources. Those are the conditions to establish a health disparity. Okay, so what's the relation between health disparities and health equity? health disparities are difference in health outcomes that are closely linked to economic, sociocultural, and environmental geographic disadvantage. The health disparities are the metrics by which we measure health equity. And health equity is the principle behind the commitment to pursue the highest possible standard of health for all while focusing on those with the greatest obstacles. What's the difference between health equity and equality? So equality involves treating everybody the same way, so giving the same resources to everybody. Equity involves treating each individual according to the needs that they have. And this picture shows that very well. So equality is when we give everybody the same opportunities. Equity is when we give opportunities to individuals according to the specific needs that they have. So if they have more needs, we give more opportunities to those groups. Okay, let's move on to the Utah Health Improvement Index. So what is the Utah Health Improvement Index? The Utah Health Improvement Index is a composite measure of social determinants of health by geographic area. It's Utah specific because it has been developed here in Utah by us, the Utah Department of Health, address the social determinants of health. We will talk a little bit more about the social determinants of health, but basically the social determinants of health are the conditions in which people live, play, and work. And then geographic area. The Health Improvement Index includes 9 indicators that describe important aspects of socioeconomic and cultural development, like demographic, socioeconomic deprivation, economic inequality, resource availability, and opportunity structure related to education. The higher the health improvement index, the more improvement the area needs. So we base the health improvement index, remember, health improvement index measure geographic disparities, in 99 small areas. Nationwide, there has been other index that have been developed, but they are based on census tracts. So we realized that when we base health indicators on census tracts, it really doesn't get a very good picture because it can mix up maybe high socioeconomic status areas with low socioeconomic status areas. So the communities are different. So the Utah Department of Health has been working with local health department and also received input for local communities to develop the Utah small areas. So the Utah small areas were first developed in 1997, and last year were updated. Before we have 63 small areas, and now we divide the state of Utah in 99 small areas. The small areas range in population because between approximately 7,000 and 90,000 people. And the small areas, if you want more information, can be found. All the information is online. So this is basically, you know, how we divide the state of Utah in 99 small areas. So 73 of the small areas are urban, and 26 of the small areas are rural or frontier. So what are the indicators that we include in the health improvement index? We base these indicators on a database that we have at the Department of Health, which is the Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance System. It's a survey that we do every single year, and we sample the whole state of Utah. So the indicators that we put together to develop the health improvement index are 9. Those are the population age 25 over with less than 9 years of education, population age 25 over with at least a high school diploma, the median income, the income disparity, which is a formula, the owner-occupied housing units and percentage of home ownership, the civilian labor force population, 16 years of unemployment, which measure the unemployment rate, families below the poverty level, and population below 100 and 50% of the poverty threshold, and also the single parent household with children age less than 18 years old. So those are the 9 indicators that we put together to develop the health improvement index. So we developed a statistical method and we came up with one number, which is the health improvement index, that summarizes all these health indicators for 99 specific areas in Utah. So the 99 specific areas are categorized in 5 groups: very high, high, average, low, and very low health improvement index area. Those are the colors that we use to categorize. Red is very high, orange is high, gray is average, light green is low, and dark green is very low. So the very high and high health improvement in this area are considered health disparities areas, because remember, the higher the index, the more improvement the area needs. And the average, low, and very low health improvement areas are considered adverse health outcomes areas. So here we have the numbers that we what we use to classify the health improvement index in these 5 groups. And you see the difference between the Utah and the urban small areas and the rural frontier areas. So in urban areas we have 18 plus 12, 23 disparities areas. And in rural areas we have 13 disparities areas, but in urban areas the disparities area are approximately 30% of the areas, and in rural areas is approximately 50%. Although the areas are less areas, we have more disparity areas. The percentage is higher in rural areas. This is just an overlook of the whole state of Utah and the Wasatch Front area, with the different health improvement index areas. The very high health improvement in the areas were found specifically in downtown Ogden, West Salt Lake County, East Provo, Central Utah, Southeast Utah, and Southwest Utah.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
The percentages that you said, so in rural Utah, that 50% of areas are either high or very high.
Yes.
Is that based on population? 50% of the population that lives in those areas?
Yes.
Is either,
mm-hmm.
Okay, thank
yes.
you.
So, This graph shows you that the health improvement index identifies small areas with high numbers of racial and ethnic minorities. So we see that the very high and high health improvement areas have a much larger percentage of racial and ethnic minorities living in the area. And you can see there, the red represents the very high health improvement areas, and the orange is the high health improvement index area. As a matter of fact, the area with the largest health improvement index is San Juan County, other in the Navajo Area Reservation. And here you see the relation between the different health indicators, how we measure, you know, the different outcome of different diseases by health improvement in this area. So you see that the non-healthcare coverage by health improvement in this area, the people living in very high and high health improvement in this area do not have healthcare coverage in a larger percentage. The same is for the infant mortality rate, smoking rate, binge drinking, diabetes, obesity, recommend physical activity, and food insecurity. So all these health indicators are worse in the areas with high or very high health improvement index. This is just an overview of the areas by local health district. All this information is available online, so you don't have to memorize anything. So here you see small areas by local health district, and you know the percentage of the total population, and also the percentage of racial and ethnic minorities, and we compare that with the overall state of Utah. And depending on the color, you will see that, you know, like Bear River, out of the 7 areas, they have 4 low health improvement areas. They have 1 that is very high, and 3 to that high. So we go like that for every health district. So if you take a look at this, you can, we did this for all the small areas in the state. And this could be a really very good tool for you to go over, depending on the area that you want to work on, and maybe decide the type of intervention that you want to develop. Because the intervention will be different depending if you are addressing a high or very high health improvement index area versus low, very low health improvement index area. These are all the areas. So let's talk a little bit about the practical applications of the health improvement index. I will talk about the trajectory of health, how we can address the social determinants of health, how the health improvement index can address the social determinants of health, the role of active transportation, and how we can work at the community and population level, you know, and what would be the role of committees like this one. Okay, let's talk about the trajectory of health. These are the social determinants of health. Again, the social determinants of health are the conditions in which people live, work, and play. So we have structural drivers that measure the social determinants of health, and maybe economic and educational drivers. We have sociocultural and environment drivers. We also have the physical and built environment, and we have the quality of healthcare. So depending of the exposure that we have, if we have people exposure to healthy exposures and behaviors, of course, they will have better health. They will decrease, you know, the disease and the medical conditions, and of course, we will decrease the healthcare expenditures. By the contrary, if we have people exposed to unhealthy exposures and behavior, the health is going to be worse. They will increase the medical conditions and increase the rate of different diseases, and at the end, you know, the medical costs will be increased. So at the end, that's something that, you know, where economics also play a big role. So this the health improvement index is a measure of the structural drivers of the social determinants of health. And how does transportation affect health? And what's the role of transportation within the social determinants of health? So we saw that the social determinants of health, one of the areas that they address are the physical and built environment. So in the physical and built environment, transportation plays a big role. So we can have active transportation, or we can have motorized transportation. And within the motorized transportation, we have public transportation, or we can have individual transportation. If we use individual transportation, of course, we are exposed to more crashes, we increase air pollution, and also we promote physical inactivity, which leads to injuries, asthma and other respiratory diseases, cardiovascular diseases, obesity, you name it. Which means, of course, increased cost of healthcare. By the contrary, if we promote active transportation, of course, we have walkable, bikeable, and transit oriented communities. We have better air quality, and also we promote physical activity. We reduce injuries. We reduce also the stress of not being in the freeway, stuck up in the freeway for an hour or two. We have healthier and active communities, and at the end, we decrease the healthcare costs in these communities. And public transportation also plays a big role here, because using public transportation, we improve all these outcomes, but I'm preaching to the choir here because all of you are aware of that. So how do we address the social determinants of health from a healthcare perspective versus public health perspective? So from a healthcare perspective, we address the social determinants of health more at the individual level, and that's what hospital clinics and the healthcare organizations do. From a public health perspective, we address social determinants of health at the community level. That's what public health departments and other agencies do. So when we address social determinants of health at the individual level, we really address individual health-related social needs. And we want to reduce health-harming conditions that affect individuals. When we address social determinants of health at the community level, we want to improve the underlying social, environmental, and economic conditions affecting communities and populations. When we address social determinants of health at the individual level, the target is really limited to a small segment of the population, which are the high utilizers. Usually, you know, healthcare organizations, what they want to do is save money, so they really focus on the needs of high utilizers. When we address the social determinants of health at the public health level, we address everybody. It's inclusive of everybody, not just the high utilizers. The desired outcomes at the individual level are to improve the health outcomes of specific individuals, decrease consumption of healthcare, and also save money to healthcare organizations and health insurance. That's the purpose of healthcare organizations when they address the social determinants of health. When we address social determinants of health at the public health level, at the community level, we really want to improve the living conditions and quality of life of the communities and populations. So both of these approaches are complementary, but they are different approaches. So when you hear different healthcare organizations that they are working on social determinants of health, yes, they are working to address the needs of the high utilizers because at the end they want to save money. When we address the social determinants of health at the public health level, we really are looking to improve the quality of life of everybody. And the Health Improvement Index is really a tool to address the social determinants of health at the community and population level. So when we work at the community and population level, what's the role of the Health Improvement Index? So this is the approach that the public health agencies have to community and population. We are focused on communities and systems. It's based on a combination of health indicators and determinants of health measure. Health indicators could be like the diabetes rate, the obesity rate. Social determinants of health could be like the percentage of people that graduate from high school, income by household, things like that. We are focused on risky conditions. We are not focused on risky behaviors. So we really examine the role of policies and institutions in saving those conditions. We do not blame the individual per se. It's like we take a look to the whole environment and see what are the risky conditions, what are the conditions that promote those risky behaviors. We emphasize our focus on creating the conditions to promote healthy living. And also, a community and population approach to health integrates community development strategies that influence the determinants of health, like housing, safety, education, access to healthcare, civic engagement, transportation. Transportation is a very important issue. It's a community developed strategy that really, you know, can address health big time. The Health Improvement Index is here to help us to measure health indicators and determinants of health. So, how do we use the Health Improvement Index in public and active transportation? So how you can use this tool to improve the health of the communities that you are working on? Let's establish a difference between the two communities, the very high and high health improvement in this area, the health disparities area, versus the average, low, and very low health improvement in this area. And let's see what are the differences in these two communities. So, in the very high high health improvement in this area, most of the residents, they lack, or maybe they have individual transportation that is not reliable. That's a difference. That's something that characterized them. Where in the average low and very low health improvement in this area, the access to reliable, cars is usually is not a problem. In the very high and high health improvement in this area, in the disparities areas, public transportation and active transportation might be the only transportation source that these individuals have to go to work, to go to school, to buy groceries, to go to clinics, to go to recreational facilities. So think about that. In this area, public transportation and active transportation might be the only tool that they have to access this basic need. In the average low and very low health improvement areas, public and active transportation is an option. The majority of the people in this area, they already have an individual car, but they prefer to use public transportation or active transportation because they want to improve their quality, they want to be more physically active, but for them it's an option. If public transportation is not there, or if active transportation is not there, they still can go to work, can go to school, can go and buy groceries, can go to sociocultural events, can go to medical appointments. There is no problem with that. In the other areas, if there is no public transportation, that can be a problem because they will miss medical appointments. They will miss even work because they don't have transportation. They cannot take maybe the kids to a school. They cannot go and buy healthy groceries. Also, safety on specific neighborhoods could be an issue. And when I talk about safety, maybe some people in those areas do not feel safe walking in those areas. Usually, in the average low and very low health improvement in this area, safety is not usually an issue, is not a problem. In the very high and high health improvement in these areas, active and public transportation might be the only tool to cover some basic needs. So this is what we have to take a look and see the difference. In the disparities areas, public transportation might be the only options that these residents have to cover basic needs. And in the other areas, the average low and very low areas, active and public transportation is a way to improve the quality of life, a way to improve health. We will have people that will be more physically active. We will have better air quality. But again, it's an option. It will improve the quality of life in that population. In the other populations is really a need. So I think that this is something to think about, when you develop these plans of active transportation and public transportation, depending on the specific areas that you are planning to target, because the focus might be a little bit different. So all this information is available in our website, www.health.utah.gov/disparities-data. So the first one, the one on your left, is the Utah Health Improvement Index report, where you will find the information that I have been presenting and more information. And then, based on the Health Improvement Index, we have developed a Health Disparities by Utah Legislative District report, is the one on your right. And both reports are available online. So really very useful information to start talking about addressing health disparities and promote health equity and use public and active transportation as a social determinant of health to promote health equity. So do you have any question?
So, thank you, Dulce. Is that how you say it, Dulce?
Uh-huh.
D-A-S? Thanks so much for sharing this with us. I was surprised that a community very close to my own was a high risk for these health issues. And I think this might be a good thing, a good tool to use when we're applying for grants for active transportation and things that would come in really handy. So. I appreciate the information. Anyone have any other questions? Yes, I have a question and a comment.
Well, I guess my sort of general comment is that I think that this information is really important, and there's often a disconnect when people in transportation think about how to plan transportation, that disconnect from the individual health and public health. And I think we're making, as a community, a really significant strides to bring those things together. You noted that health considerations should be, could be, and should be factored into transportation decisions. And I just want to note, some of you know this already, but the transportation planning agencies, so Wasatch Front Regional Council, Mountainland Association of Governments, one of the things that we have done, and I think we can do more, but one of the things that we have done in this area fits with what you're talking about, and that is when putting together the plans for where transportation investment should be made, particularly public transit and active transportation trails, we did first a look at where there are what we labeled vulnerable communities. So communities where there's a higher than a, not exactly utilizing the criteria that you described, but similarly looking at high concentrations of low-income households, high concentrations of minority households, or high concentrations of zero-car households, and mapped those, and then use that geographic distribution of vulnerable communities as one of the factors in prioritizing the plans for investment for new transportation. Particularly when we compared those areas that are, that were vulnerable communities with areas that have low transportation access to opportunities. So low access to jobs, low access to education. Because you can have an area that may be a low income area that is very well served by transit and trails or bike paths. So then it may not be that a additional transportation investment is going to help target those conditions. But if you look at an area that is, let's say, low income, and also is lacking in transportation access, you overlay those things, then that becomes, for transportation planners and transportation investment, a target then to say, we need to do something about that. And so that kind of thinking has been integrated into the transportation planning processes, but maybe it needs to be more, and then I think the data that you all are providing really can help to deepen and inform that that nature of analysis and planning that is happening in Utah.
And a perfect example is just to take the health improvement index map and just map all the public transportation in the area. We may have a very high health improvement in this area, but it's really very well served. So we don't have to do anything there. But if by the contrary, we have other areas that are not served by public transportation, we need to plan something in the area. And again, also thinking about public transportation and also thinking about the active transportation, we need to think about the safety of the neighborhoods. Do they still feel safe, you know, going out and doing, you know, physical activity, walking, biking in the area? That's something that we need to have in mind.
And then I have a question. Yes. Okay, so, and then my question is, you're coming here to share information. We're not, you know, this is not a healthcare room, but it's relevant, as you've talked about. Will you just maybe tell us a little bit more about how you and your department are coordinating with other stakeholders? Like, I know Department of Workforce Services working on intergenerational poverty issues, transportation agencies. I think Sarah here? Where's Sarah? Yeah. And I don't know, Sarah, if you want to comment on this, because Sarah with Get Healthy Utah, I mean, they're doing a lot of work in this area also. So what's the sort of, you know, Utah stakeholders coming together to work on these issues?
That's something that we are trying to promote. And here we have Brett, you know, representing the Utah Department of Health. And what we are trying to do is, in order to promote health, because usually when people talk about health, they talk about sickness, and they talk about health insurance and access to health care. We want to talk about health. We want to talk about improving health and quality of life of individuals. So it is important what you say first is like that health representatives are in every committee. It could be like a housing committee, a transportation committee, a labor committee, because at the end we want to have healthy individuals in order for them to be more productive, in order for them to be you know, a less cost to the society. So health really should be involved in all the aspects, either state health department, local health departments, or maybe both. And that's something that the Department of Health is trying to move, you know, in that direction. We already have, you know, people from the Department of Health, you know, involved in some of these committees, like Brett here, but we need to be more involved. And sometimes maybe we need to be invited to be there because, you know, we are not aware of every single committee. So maybe just going there and talk to them about why health is important and why health should be in the back mind of every single committee will be really, really important. So that's the direction. That's in order to improve quality of life and improve the health of our communities, we need to have health in mind when we plan for everything, when we plan for transportation, for housing, for workforce, for business development. Health has to be in the back mind of everybody. And since it's not, we need to have public health representatives.
Can I just add? Thank you. Do you know where this is?
That's okay.
Sarah, will you grab a mic so we can hear you, please?
Sorry. I'm Sarah Hudson with Health Utah. So we have been with Brent convening some groups of transportation agencies to talk about health data in the past couple of months, and we had a presentation of health improvement index to that group. So I think we've been working hard to try and get the information out. But like Dulce said, we really need people to say, like, if you have other places you think this information would be helpful, I think between the Department of Health and others, there's lots of people willing to come and present that information. And I also think that we've been trying to be really strategic about the types of data and information that would be most useful. And you know, even last week, Heidi set up a call with the CDC, and we talked about what's happening in other states. So there's a lot of really great things happening right now in this sort of intersection between health and transportation data. So if, you know, people here have places where you think that information would be helpful, or if you have resources or information that would be helpful for health agencies to know, I think now is just a time where there's a lot of conversation going on.
And it's also very important to involve the representatives in your area, the local health representatives and the legislators. That's the reason we develop also this health disparities by legislative district, because you can go to your representative and say, hey, what's going on with this area? And they are the ones who, you know, can pass laws, can allocate funding. So you know, we can look for federal funding, we can look for state funding, but really, you know, people need to be aware of this. And we need to have data to back up. So this is the type of data that can back up, you know, this type of interventions.
Dulce, I have a question. I'm on the phone. My question is, will this information be updated regularly?
This is something that we are planning to update every 3 years.
Okay, thanks.
Just one quick comment. This is really wonky stuff. I mean, we get into some crazy statistics, some crazy data collection processes. That's our gig. That's what we do. That's what we like to do. You don't have to be the stats master of all this. Just let us come in and, you know, answer some of the questions. Again, like he was saying, this is what we're here to do. So again, reach out. We'll jump at it.
All right. Thank you so much, Dulce.
Welcome. Thank you.
Okay, item number 6 is Wasatch Bike Plan, and Hugh will be giving a presentation.
Thank you very much. Anybody ever heard of the Wasatch Bike Plan? It's in the room. Raise your hand if you're familiar with it. Nice and big. All right, not everybody, but a lot of folks. Anytime I do a presentation, I try and get a picture of Jory taking a selfie in there. So, you know, that's him. Just makes it nice and clear. So, Wasatch Bike Plan is something that really has been spearheaded by Bike Utah, and Phil is here, and so grateful for that. And this is something from the Bike Utah website, right? The idea of the Utah Bike Plan is by initiating bicycle and pedestrian master plans in every community. And all 4 Wasatch Front counties will ensure safe, connected bicycling routes are always a priority. Right? Anybody that is walking or biking doesn't recognize unless there's like a huge monument sign to say "Welcome to, you know, South Salt Lake" or something like that. Don't realize when we're crossing jurisdictions. So the idea that every community has this bike plan, bike and pedestrian plan, is going to be better for all the users across the Wasatch Front. And as part of that, some active transportation plan standards were put together with Mountain Line Association Governments, Bike Utah, WFRC, UDOT, and so all those partners came together to sort of say, hey, when you're doing these plans, here's a basic checklist of recommended items that should be in the plan to really make them comprehensive plans that are beneficial to people on the ground. So this is available on the WFRC website. I'm happy to get a copy to anybody that wants it if you're interested. And so based on these standards, right, and starting to track all the communities across the Wasatch Front, right, this is where it started in 2016. If it's in green, it means there was a plan. So this is looking from essentially Brigham City down through Utah County in 2016, and things are gonna pop up here in 2017. Anything that's yellow is a funded plan. Okay, so green was on board, yellow is getting funding in process, and as we moved into 2018, a lot of those yellow funded plans turned into green plans, right? They were finished and complete. And it's really starting to fill in. And a lot of this also started with Jim Price down representing Utah County and Mountain Land down there, really taking the lead and dragging everybody else along to get us on board here across the region. And then in 2019, you can see all of the funded plans and very few remaining communities that don't have a plan or don't have funding in place to incorporate a plan. And so this has just been tremendous progress. Really grateful again to Phil and Bike Utah for their efforts on this, and looking forward to continuing to complete this plan. But also, you know, if we have the communities here, and so that we have these plans adopted, I'm trying to think of what's next. Are there other areas of the plan that weren't as developed? Maybe you didn't have the funding or the time to get to those areas that need a little bit more nuance to them. There are other aspects. Is there need to be more emphasis on some walking in your city? And what does that look like? These are bicycle and pedestrian plans, but often are sort of bike heavy in a lot of the plans. You know, do we need to look at, okay, we have this awesome project identified in the plan, how we can execute? We can have these sweet bike and ped bridges, you know, different places, crossing freeways, rivers, whatever it might be. So encourage everybody in this room to start thinking about all right, we have a plan, but we're not done. What's coming next? And just again to say, Bajita's been a big part of this. This is probably Phil's last meeting with us here today. He didn't want me to mention that, but I'm doing it anyways. So if you have a chance, grab Phil and thank him for the 5 years of work he's done here in Utah to make Utah a better place to ride and walk in a lot of cases, because there's so much crossover between the bicycle and pedestrian worlds as we're doing this active transportation and focusing on quality of life and health. Phil, is there anything you'd like to add to all, everything that you've done or Bike Utah has done with partners over the last little while?
No. No, I'd just say, I mean, we're in the hiring process right now, so I just encourage whoever's my successor, you know, obviously they're going to need all the help in the world to try and get up to speed on all the things that, that have been going on. So we're in that process right now, and we're not even close to done. We still have a long way to go, but we've made a lot of good progress. So
okay, unless there's any questions or anything I can elaborate on for folks in the audience, I think I'm
enough.
Oh, yes, Brett.
One quick thing on the active transportation plan standards. This is actually a really huge deal. This is the reason being is when we were collecting this along with Phil with Bike Utah. We've been collecting this data across the state as well, and I believe it was at the end of last year we had 76 plans that had been adopted. When you looked at the active transportation plan standards and compared it, that number dropped to 26. So it was very significant on not only are we getting more active transportation plans, we're getting better ones, and that's really coming down to groups like this and having the resources. So definitely access those standards, because they really make a big difference in not only quality, but also that usefulness within the community. So thank you for that very much.
Thanks.
Thank you, Hale. We just had a bridge redone over I-84, and we spoke with UDOT, and that was one of the things that we requested, is that they make it more bicycle friendly, and so we have it painted with lanes and everything, and just even these small things, small steps, make a huge difference to communities, so appreciate that. All right.
I was going to add also these putting together these preliminary costs and kind of talking to your priorities really helps. And you got in region too, when we're looking at different funding, different sources, it's really helpful to have these projects already kind of comprised and say that these are the top priorities for the communities.
Thank you, Grant. I can't overemphasize including the right partners at the table when developing. You can have the standards, but if you don't include UDOT, you don't include the Department of Health, you don't include the right stakeholders, your plan will only be as good as the participants you have in it, and so and supporting. So recommend including the DOT, Transit Authority, other agencies to participate in these plans.
And Mayor, just as a reflection on that presentation, seeing how much progress has been made in a short period of time is really exciting, right? I mean, we're filling in almost the entire region with plans either done or that will be done now in 2019, and it makes me feel like we got to look hard at those areas that don't have a plan either in development or completed. But this committee, I mean, thinking back over a few years, one of the objectives that this committee set a few years ago was in fact to make sure that every community has a local bike plan that integrates with the regional plans, the county level, the regional, the state plans. And it's just really awesome to see so much progress being made. So nice job, everybody.
I'm gonna add one thing to that. Well, my city is South Weber, is long and narrow, and it has a state road running through it, and that's basically our big artery, but it's very narrow and bikes love to use it. We've had on our active transportation plan to widen that road and put bike lanes in it. Well, UDOT has told us for years that's just not feasible. We're not gonna do it, but now, SR60 is on the priority list for Region 1, and they're looking at the possibility of widening that road, which would be a huge benefit to our city. So, all right. Item number 7 is Wasatch Fund, funding opportunities for local government. Scott.
All right, thank you for giving us a few minutes of your time. And this is a perfect segue from the Wasatch Bike Plan into the funding programs for what we'll be discussing today. So you can switch it. Oh, do I have the clicker? I have the power. Awesome. My name is Scott Hess. I'm Community and Economic Development Director for Wasatch Front Regional Council, and I get the pleasure of introducing our 6 funding programs that we have here at Wasatch Front Regional Council. All of our programs are competitive. In most cases, applicants compete with other applicants within the region or within the program planning boundaries. So some of these aren't relevant to all 5 counties that we represent. Others are 5 counties plus reaching up into Brigham City. More details about each of the funding programs, including application deadlines, will be emailed to you all, and we also have the program leads for each of these programs that are going to present to you today. So I'll start with the Wasatch Front Economic Development District. So the Wasatch Front Economic Development District operates under Wasatch Front Regional Council, but it's its own entity that is really the conduit to receive federal economic development administration funds into the region. So we operate on the full 5 county basis, Salt Lake, Morgan, Tooele, Davis, Weber counties. And our mission is to support economic development plans, promote long-term economic competitiveness, and attract federal monies in order to implement local plans. Some example projects that have been applied for are planning requests, one for advanced composites, a construction request for a makerspace or entrepreneurial efforts, and then you can do workforce training requests. And EDA has 3 specific funding programs. One is a public works economic adjustment assistance from $100,000 to $3 million. You have regional innovation strategies, that's your entrepreneurial centers, other cluster-based solutions, innovation, that's up to $500,000, and then local technical assistance for planning, which is up to $300,000. The one thing to remember about the economic development money is that it's dollars in typically equal jobs out, so you want to be thinking about, is this money directly impacting or creating new jobs in my community? You can reach out to any one of us and get this information. Don't feel like you need to memorize what each one of our programs do, but we just want to go out. This is the time that we give this presentation to all of our committees as well as all the counties, and if you're interested in learning more about any of these funding opportunities, then please let us know. So next, we're going to have Christy Dahlberg give you the Community Development Block Grant information.
Hello, so I'm Christy Dahlberg. I administer the Community Development Block Grant Small Cities Program for the Wasatch Front. The program is administered for smaller, less populated cities and counties in the region. The objectives of CDBG is to assist in developing viable urban communities by providing decent housing and a suitable living environment, principally for persons of low to moderate income. The CDBG program is a competitive grant program funded by HUD to within Morgan, Tooele, and Weber counties, and that's excluding Ogden City. So these are projects that were funded this most recent cycle. They range anywhere from APA upgrades to water and sewer and curb, gutter, and sidewalk projects. So we had about $870,000 to spend this last year. Awards were on average $165,000, and the minimum grant award is $30,000. This is a comprehensive list of types of projects that are available for funding through CDBG. So they're not limited, they're wide in variety. So that is CDBG in a nutshell. If you'd like to learn more, you can go ahead and contact me, and we'll have our contact information on the last slide. And the next cycle starts up in October, if you're interested. So next up, we'll have Megan Townsend with the Transportation and Land Use Connection Program.
Okay, number 3 in the relay. So the Transportation and Land Use Connection Program. This is our technical assistance program for planning. So we assist local governments in their planning efforts implementing the Wasatch Choice Vision. We have $1.5 million annually for this program, and we program about that. each year in projects. The program is a partnership between UDOT, UTA, Salt Lake County, and the Wasatch Front Regional Council. This partnership is really critical because not only do these partners contribute funding to the program, they also contribute their time, their staff comes to make sure that these projects are viable for their organizations as well. So the TLC program goals are to maximize the value of investment in public infrastructure, enhance access to opportunity, increase travel options to optimize mobility, and create communities with opportunities to live, work, and play. So of course, a lot of the planning goals that you'll have in your city are gonna fit under these, as well as goals for active transportation. So in the 6 years of the program's existence, we funded 79 projects. 91% of our region has expressed interest. They've submitted applications to this program. We wanna bring that up to 100%. So if you know a community who hasn't done a TLC project, go poke them. The program takes communities for, so we meet communities wherever you are, whether that's in the planning stage or the policy stage, or we're ready to talk about, final products of whatever it is the city is trying to accomplish. Just last year, we actually funded 14 communities' active transportation plans. That's in 4 separate projects, so some communities are really working together. We're really trying to contribute to that, regional coverage of active transportation plans, and we're getting there. So Salt Lake County is almost completely covered, so that's awesome. Any questions, let us know afterward. Ben Westrich is gonna talk about the last 3.
Good morning. So the last 3 programs that we have an opportunity to review with you are programs that pertain to the urbanized areas. This would be the Salt Lake West Valley urban area, essentially Salt Lake County area west of the mountains. The Ogden Layton urban area, which is essentially from Salt Lake County up through Brigham City, again west of the Wasatch. So the first program is the Surface Transportation Program, or the STP program. These funds are available for federal aid eligible facilities. These would be roads that are classified as a collector or grader. They can widen or reconstruct new construction. An example of that one would be a narrow 2-lane facility. This one here was out on the west side of Salt Lake Valley. With the reconstruction there from a narrow 2-lane irregular cross section to a full 5-lane cross section with shoulders and bike lanes, curb gutter and sidewalk and lighting on both sides. With an important factor with the bike lanes take place actually in most of our STP projects. There's a wide variety of multiple aspects of each project and include a lot of active transportation improvements. The next program is the Congestion Mitigation or the Air Quality Program. Now this program's a little unique. This program has to have an air quality benefit. And so it's commuter related. It's a project that'll demonstrate air quality benefits. And there are quite a few, but there's a focus that we're focusing in on as we move forward to get those projects that'll generate the greater air quality benefits. Some of those projects would include anything from our transit to our ITS, to bike and ped, to the technology. And then the last project is our Transportation Alternative Program, or the TAP program. This is kind of the fun pot of money. This relates a lot to this body. This is non-motorized type projects. This can be bike, trail, recreational use, sidewalk improvements. A project that's received some TAP funds is under the DNRG Rail Trail, bringing a lot of unity through the communities with the development of this program or these resources available. Now, as has been mentioned, normally this time of the year, this is when we'll be preparing each of the organizations or going out to all the communities, soliciting the opportunity that our letters of intent will be coming. We've moved that up a year or a month. This year, we're actually gonna be making that request near the end of August rather than the end of September. The letters of intent will be due in September, concept report. Sam will be due in the middle part of December, allowing us additional time in our project evaluation through the end of the year, into the early part of the year with the spring, in a period of time when we will be identifying the new projects. Are there any questions on any of the programs that we've talked about?
And will you give the folks in the room a sense of how much money we're talking about annually in these programs?
Thank you, Andrew. So it's generally around the ballpark between 35 and 40 million over those programs that have been talked about today.
All right, any questions? Thank you, Ben and Megan and Christy and Scott for your presentations. I know that South Weaver is taking advantage of the TLC, and I believe that Megan will be meeting with our city manager next week. So we're excited to get going on that. That deals with the connection of Bonneville Shoreline Trail with the Weaver River Trail through South Weaver. So it's pretty exciting. All right. Our next item is any agency, city, county program updates. If anyone has anything they want to.
Thanks, ma'am. I'm not sure if anybody from Davis County is here. I didn't see anybody earlier, but Andrew mentioned an article in the paper a couple days ago in reference to the Bonneville Shoreline Trail, and for those that saw it, right, the Forest Service is coming out with a plan to connect all of the Bonneville Shoreline Trail in Davis County, working through that, and so that's a pretty cool project that's coming up. And also, it was mentioned in the email that we sent out, but anybody that's interested in grabbing a quick ID and bringing it back to our office here at noon, we're going to be watching a webinar on community outreach strategies for transportation, and you're welcome to join us for that if you can stick around. And then, John, do that. Yeah. You may have noticed the new lobby art we have out there. That's the a new Green Bike electric version. They're launching those. Right now, the Green Bike system's about 350 or so bikes. They're going to launch 50 new electric bikes tomorrow in Salt Lake City. Ogden City is going to expand. We're expanding Ogden City. They're looking at having both these electric bikes and the regular electric bikes. They're way better than the Lime bikes if you tried them out last fall. And so what we can do after this meeting, take it out down to the plaza here at the Gateway if you're interested in zipping around on it. We've got approval to do that. Just the only caveat is don't ride it down the stairs, Brett. So safety first, buddy. And they're not full electric, they're pedal assist. So about 40% of the effort to use them with max speed I'd set right now at 17 miles an hour. So you can go about twice the distance that you would in the same amount of time as on a normal green bike. And if you want some more exercise, you don't have to have the pedal assist on. You can turn it off.
I have a quick update. So tomorrow at 10 a.m. in Saratoga Springs, UDOM is doing a press release for our brand new intersection. It's a CFI with full bicycle accommodation through the intersection and two-stage bike turn boxes, green pavement markings, bike boxes, the whole nine yards. It's a really awesome design. It's probably the first CFI with bicycle accommodation through it in the country. So we're going to be talking about that innovative design, the fact that there's bike accommodation, and two-stage turn boxes that will also be on other UDOT projects that are incoming. So if you want to show up tomorrow with your bike, it would be awesome to have more bikes than not in the footage of the intersection and for our press release. So I'll be there. Travis Evans with you will be there. I think Jim's going to be there. And yeah, if you're available at 10 a.m. tomorrow, Saratoga Springs, the intersection of Pioneer Crossing and Redwood.
It's going to be very cool. It's the most green paint in Utah.
Yeah, the most green paint in Utah. When you look at it on the TOC cameras, it's like, it's very green. So, yeah.
Thank you, Heidi.
I have a soft voice, so
I just wanted to recap with the with what Ben said with the grant applications. A lot of times with UDOT, we have pavement projects coming up, and we hopefully have reached out to all of the different cities about what those pavement projects are going to be. And sometimes I think we have 1-2% of the funding that can be added for those projects. But if there's big facilities that want to be added while those are going underway, these grant applications are, and we aren't able to find the funds within UDOT, then it's a good, these grants are a good way to be able to provide that extra funding to provide the facilities on those pavement projects. So hopefully you're aware of those pavement projects that are coming underway. And sometimes it's a simple restripe, and those obviously could be accommodated, but the other ones that require more funding, it's always good if it's more a significant amount, these are gonna synergies to be able to take advantage of.
I just want to give a quick update. We presented on our Zaxter scooters and dog bikes last month, and we launched last Thursday. We did launch 200 Zaxter scooters, growing to 500, starting in small baby steps. Provo's conservative, and we have to go slow and small steps, but we'll get there. It was a great launch, and we're really excited. In the first 3 days, we've had over 2,000 rides.
That's great.
Is it mainly the students that are targeted, or is it broader?
It's just
broader?
The community. It's interesting. BYU geofenced in their campus and any property they own, which was interesting, but that's okay. We just work around them, and they have a rule, no scooters, skateboards on campus. So we've just had to work around that, and thank heaven Zaxter's didn't turn a run when they met with BYU and were a little thrown, set back from their comments, but we told them hang in there with us. And so the students start, Brigham Young University starts September 2nd, so they haven't even really all landed yet. So it's been a lot of community and family, and it's been really fun. I think we're headed in the right direction. And then in January, we'll launch our docked bikes. We're just waiting for our contract to finish up with Select Med for the branding.
Thank you, Mayor. Anyone else? Phil, would you like to say anything?
Come on, Phil.
Well, we appreciate all you've done for Bike Utah, and we appreciate your service, and we'll miss you. All right.
Can I?
Yes, you may.
Phil won't say anything, but I will. Phil's leaving us a great legacy of increasing bikeability in Utah and bringing together a lot of disparate groups, a lot of disparate interests, and he's leaving a terrific legacy. We'll really miss him.
Thank you, Jim and Phil. All right, other business. Did anyone raise your hand if you biked today to the meeting? Oh yes, we have a little reward for you.
I don't get one.
Oh man.
Man.
Wrong. That is so wrong.
Is anybody else in here? Right? Phil? Alright, Andrew.
I don't want one now.
Thanks. You ready?
You
got one?
Don't say Viking here isn't rewarding now. I just wish he'd had it last month when I came on bike.
Never mind. There you go.
All right. Just so you know, our next ATC meeting is October 9th, 9:45 a.m., so please put that on your calendars. I also make note of the upcoming events, some of them we've already spoken of. And with that, I will entertain a motion to adjourn. Okay, the Mayor Witt, and do I have a second? righty. All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Motion is, our meeting is adjourned. Thank you.